Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm Phil Kirkbride, and today I am joined by Dave Prentice, Gav Buckland, Sam Carroll, and Adam Jones of the Tudor Fat over all the major talking points at Goodison Park. And of course, this week has been another winning week, six in a row for Carlo Ancelotti's Blues. Cup progress into the quarterfinals and across a game with Brighton to preview. Loads for us to get stuck into, chaps. So we will start with midweek Preno, 4-1. It was perhaps a scoreline that didn't reflect some of the chances that West Ham had, but a very impressive progression into the quarterfinals nonetheless.
Yeah, I thought it was a relatively fair scoreline, given some of the opportunities that, you know, Everton missed in the first half, and, you know, Richarlison's misfortune with the latest bit of magic from James Rodriguez. What I like particularly about it, though, was just the sense of authority that Everton seemed to have now. Very, very similar to West Brom in the, you know, we suffer a setback. You know, they score a goal within, was it 27 seconds of the restart? And yet there's no panic, there's no jitters. Whether that's as a result of the absence of a crowd, I don't know. I've seen some speculation from people suggesting that, you know, the absence of a crowd might actually be helping Everton in some areas. I dispute that vehemently. It was just like a sense of authority and a sense of command about the performance. And even though, you know, West Ham equalised, you never really felt that, you know, you were concerned in any way. And it was just a stronger lineup, or as strong a lineup as we expected. And the, you know, the first choice players that he selected all delivered. And just a word for that opening goal from Calvert-Lewin. How good was that from, you know, the creation for Michael Keane, you know, the vision, and to the, that touch was sublime to bring it down and lift it. I've seen people say if Dennis Bergkamp scores a goal like that, you keep seeing it on repeat over and over again, because it was Dominic Calvert-Lewin in a Carabao Cup tie, you probably won't. But it was a very, very good night. And I think it just underlined again that the club is going in the right place, in the right direction, and we're all thoroughly enjoying it.
Gav, obviously you wanted to talk about Calvert-Lewin, 8 goals in 5 games, an England call-up this week. He is, as Carlo Ancelotti says, on fire. Preno makes an interesting point there. Do you think that actually, that despite everything that we've just said, and you know, 13 goals last season, etc., do you still think that some people, perhaps outside of Goodison, the walls of Goodison, still think that he's not the answer, or he's not quite the striker that we believe he can be, or as good as we're seeing?
It goes back to what Carlo was saying in his press conference, I think, today and last week, isn't it? He needs consistency. Remember, this runs off the back of not scoring, and was it the last 9 or 10 games of last season? So, 8 and 5 is good. Well, that's effectively 8 and 15, isn't it? This is a different kettle of fish. So, I know he'd had a good run before then, and we can play around with stats to prove anything, but he's got to be consistent, hasn't he? And consistent means getting up to that 20 goal a season mark that Carlo said about last week, and doing that consistently, maybe getting up to 25. Players can have good runs. I was thinking that at this time last season, didn't Tammy Abraham have a similar run at Chelsea? He was knocking them in left, right, and centre. And I get that. So, I still think he's very much a work in progress. What I like about him, which, you know, it just shows that how hard he works, and, you know, how we listen to people, is the one we mentioned about Calvert-Lewin is, I think it was the analysis match today, I think it was after the Crystal Palace game last year, 0-0, not the one in August, the one in April. And I think Lineker and somebody else might have been shared on match today. We're looking at him saying, like, his problem is he's not attacking space, he's not taking, you know, taking chances in terms of not taking chances with the ball, there's taking a chance and running into an area where the ball might go. And he started to do that, isn't it? And that was shown perfectly on the goal on Wednesday night, wasn't it? I thought he was offside when Wolby shot at the post, because I couldn't believe he was that far ahead of the play when the ball came back to him. But when you watch it again, he starts running towards the goal when a Wobie shoots, doesn't he? Gambling and taking the chance that the goalie might parry it and it runs loose, or it might hit the woodwork and comes back. And he gets the reward for gambling there, doesn't he? And that's the difference to me compared to a year or two ago. It's that reading of the game, isn't it? Plus, then that's, you know, third goal. He's going to score there, isn't he? That's when he scores six or seven goals in four or five games. Sounds like that's easy to finish. So you're seeing a couple of things there with him. Far better in terms of anticipating what's going on and more confidence. But he needs to show it consistently, as Carlo said, quite rightly.
Adam, how much do you think this particular run of form that Dominic's in is down to the change in formation? Because this is the first time he has played, and many perhaps, but certainly for Dominic, the first time he's played in the middle of a front three?
Yeah, I think it certainly plays a part. And I think maybe we saw that last season as well. We saw the benefits of him, you know, having somebody up alongside him when we switched to 4-4-2. And I think the link-up play between him and Richarlison was really good at stages last season. And I think perhaps this season with the change in formation, obviously we've commented all throughout this season so far about how the midfield has kind of changed for Everton. But I think in the way it's changed, it's just creating more and more chances for those going forward. You know, you've seen Richarlison get loads more chances when he's playing out wide. James Rodriguez is getting chances himself, and he's obviously setting up loads of chances. So Calvert-Lewin is just having so much creativity behind him now. And I think that's probably where we're seeing the benefits of it. And, you know, you're still having Richarlison, you know, at times he's often playing almost up front with him. James Rodriguez is getting forward and playing up with him. You know, we're seeing Ducore and Gomez get in and around the box as well. There's just a whole lot more support up that top end of the pitch now that we've changed formation. So, yeah, I'd probably say that a lot of it is down to a change in formation, but it's also down to Calvert-Lewin himself. As Gav rightly says, you know, he's changed his game over the last few months. I'd say he is anticipating those kind of loose balls inside the box a little bit more. I think he quite rightly says that third goal against West Ham was the perfect summary of that, you know, following the ball in just on the off chance that it was going to be there. And I think his goal against Crystal Palace last week also typified that as well. You know, Seamus Coleman runs in behind the defence and he just doesn't have to look up. He just knows Calvert-Lewin is going to be on the edge of the box, exactly where he needs to be to put the ball in the back of the net. And perhaps we haven't seen that a lot from Calvert-Lewin up until this season, but he seems to really have got the knack of that this season. So I think it's probably a mixture of the formation change and Carlo Ancelotti's teachings. But yeah, I'd say the formations play the crucial part.
And of course, Calvert-Lewin's hat trick, Sam, helping us through to the quarterfinals, where we will play Manchester United at Goodison. I think a lot of most Blues were pretty pleased with that draw, weren't they?
Yeah, I think you've got to take it, haven't you? I think it's a nice mix of getting one of the better teams in the competition who probably wouldn't want to play at Wembley, maybe just because they have a bit more experience there. But at Goodison, you've got to be thoroughly confident. And I think the only sad part about it is that I'd be a lot more confident if we knew there was going to be 40,000 of us in the stadium there. That's not there, but it hasn't hindered us so far this season, and hopefully it doesn't hinder us tomorrow. So, you know, there's still a long time to go as well. The thing, isn't it, that it's December now after that little flurry of games. So we'll have to see what kind of form we're going into. But, you know, we've already been to Tottenham and beat them this season. So, you know, why not? I think it's a good draw in the sense that if we beat them, you could then be playing a Stoke or someone like or a Brentford in the semi-final, which, you know, would be really, really good. But we're still going to have to beat two, potentially three top six teams to win it, aren't we? So United are just the first one that need ticking off.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, we'll move on to sort of the big transfer news of the week then. And a player who Everton are closing in on signing and has has sort of flown under the radar and all of a sudden gathered pace and moved quickly this week, Preno. Norwich defender Ben Godfrey, looks like we are close to sealing the deal for the 22-year-old. I have to be perfectly honest, I can't say my knowledge of Ben Godfrey is particularly extensive. What about yours? Are we getting a good player?
Oh, yeah, I've absolutely his game intimately from, you know, made his debut. No, I have absolutely no idea whether he's any good. You've just got to have faith in the recruitment process, which, let's face it, has been pretty solid during the course of the season already. It's an area of the pitch where we do need reinforcements as a matter of urgency. We've said this for some time, certainly since Mason Holgate got injured, and then obviously when Jared Branthwaite, you know, added to that list as well. We can't really continue much longer with the lack of depth in that area of the pitch. So, you know, we're going to have to hope that, yes, they have spotted a young gem that can settle in very, very quickly, because I think he could be needed sooner rather than later. But no, you know, to answer the question, I don't know a great deal about him. But, you know, to spend that sum of money on a young man from the Championship suggests that, you know, he does have a fair bit of potential. But no, I'd be telling absolute porkies if I suggested I know anything more than a couple of clips I've seen on YouTube. So I think we've just got to have faith in the recruitment process, which, as I say, has been pretty good so far over the last few months.
Gav, hot off the digital press, Daniel Farke, the Norwich City manager, has been giving his press conference this afternoon and has said he won't be with us for the Derby game. I can confirm that. Whoever signs Ben Godfrey can be unbelievably happy.
Yeah, it's just put his price up by £5 million there, hasn't he? I'm surprised Penny never mentioned Dave Watson there whilst waxing lyrical, you know, as a you know, a missed big opportunity there. Last player we bought from Norwich centre half, hope he's as good as Waggy. I can only add to what Penno was saying there. What I think it's there's a couple of points here, isn't there? That would make it Branthwaite will probably now be fifth in the pecking order, I would imagine, because Godfrey has got Premier League experience, a little bit older, a bit more seniority. And you don't spend, you know, or we may spend whatever amount of money on him. Is what happens to Branthwaite? Do we try and put him on loan and know he's injured? Because, I mean, I presume you can put people on loan because the AFL is the 15th of October or something like that, the deadline.
Yeah.
So there may be an opportunity there to put him on loan, is the first thing. The second thing as well, which I don't want to sort of like everybody make a big sigh, is as we were talking the other week about like San and Decore, Alan and Rodriguez, I'm saying we need to get shed loads of players to make this work for financial regulation purposes. And I was just thinking the same about Godfrey. I mean, it's not for now, but it raises an interesting question, this, about what the club's attitude is going towards financial regulation. Which is not for now, and I'm just wondering what you know, is it we'll spend now, and if we cause us trouble further on down the line, as long as it's made us successful, then we will cross that bridge when we find it. I'm just interested to see how that's going to work out going forward.
I do wonder, because the noises from the football club for a number of weeks and certainly even in public with Carlo had been that the club were only looking to sign a defender on loan.
So, yeah.
It feels to me as though Godfrey's availability at this point in the market and the fact that he's still around and still hasn't been snapped up has perhaps accelerated plans and was an opportunity, if you like, that the club thought, well, we'll just have to financially make it work because we really rate him and we won't get another opportunity to get him next summer.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of spend, it's not going to make it. In terms of, like, it'll be, what, £5 million a year on, have to pay for the transfer thing, what, maybe a couple of million on top of that for wages. It costs us £7 million a year for him. We get somebody on loan. I mean, like, say Zuma, I would imagine he's on big wages. Once you throw in maybe a loan fee, it's probably going to, you know, cost us the same amount of money. So I get the impression it's probably more, it's been difficult getting somebody in on loan as well. And maybe this lad's come in, you know, we've been linked with him before, haven't we? I think he's been on our radar a long time. And also, as you know, you said before, and I believe it's definitely true, you can have worse transfer policies than go to clubs who've been relegated near the bottom of the table and getting their best player.
Well, Decore being in
well, the yeah, yeah. I mean, look across the park for further proof. So, I mean, Harry Maguire was from relegated to Hull, wasn't he? I think, yeah, I've not a great knowledge of him, but from what I heard, he's very good. Right age, all that type of stuff. I won't even mention the sale value at this point. And you've got to trust people who are recruiting at the moment, Evan, because as Penno's just said there, we're on a bit of a roll, aren't we, in terms of recruitment, and long may it continue.
Adam, Gav touched on it in terms of talking about Jared Branthwaite, because one of the many conversations I've had with a couple of people over the past couple of days about Godfrey coming in here is where does he fit in? Because this isn't, I think, what people are sort of understandably questioned is it's not a lone player coming in here who is hit with us for a season and understands that, you know, he understands the situation, that he's coming largely on a temporary deal, etc. Ben Godfrey is coming to us and we'll sign a long-term contract and we'll probably expect to play. So where does he play? How does he get in the team? When does Carlo give him the opportunity?
I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because I've had similar questions as well. And it's interesting now, especially with there being no League Cup fixtures until December, is it? You know, like mid to late December. You know, you do wonder when there's going to be an opportunity for him to break into the team. But on the flip side of things, I think this is exactly what we want at Everton, isn't it? We want this kind of competition in every single position of the pitch. And to be honest, at centre-back, we haven't really had that since, you know, Kurt Zouma was here, maybe. You know, we added a little bit when Holgate, Mina and Keane were all fit last season and we had a bit of competition, but we've not really had four centre-backs all fighting for two positions in the squad. But I think that's exactly the kind of progression that we need to have. You know, Ben Godfrey might not walk straight into the team at Everton, but, you know, this is now Everton spending, you know, a deal believed to be £25 million on a really promising young centre-back, and he might not walk into the team. I can only see that as a positive thing, really. Like he's got to fight his way into this team. You know, we've got Michael Keane, who I think has probably been our best player since lockdown. He's playing tremendously well at the minute. You know, Yerry Mina, we've all seen how well he can play. Mason Holgate, I think he's been absolutely fantastic since the start of last season. And, you know, you'd hope when he's fit that he walks straight back into the team as well. And hopefully Godfrey will only be able to add to those sort of options. So, yeah, I think he does just add, you know, an extra bit of cover for it, like, where initially for when, you know, likes of, say, Mina or Keane needed resting or if there was injuries, etc. I just think it's an improvement on the options that we already have. You know, Godfrey is a step up than Branthwaite at the minute. So I'd like to see, you know, Branthwaite, you know, move back to the 23s and, you know, continue his development from there, maybe even go out on loan. You know what happens with Branthwaite. But I just think Godfrey adds that kind of competition that we kind of want to see all over the pitch. So I can only see it as a really positive thing, even if he doesn't walk straight into the team.
Sam, are you able to repair the reputation of the Royal Blue podcast and offer any informed opinion on Ben Godfrey? Because none of us have barely seen him play.
Sadly not. So I've just been kind of trying to sweep up little bits of knowledge. I've seen a few knowledge fans today saying that they're gutted that he didn't give. Apparently, he should have gave him a chance to play holding midfield. Well, and then a lot of fans were kind of jumping on that, saying that could potentially be his best position, which gives us a bit of a Jabaman situation, doesn't it? Where we're signing a player who people are saying can play in both positions. But it definitely looks like he's been signed as a centre-half, you know, a lot of pace to burn, it looks like, which is definitely something we've missed for a long time now, isn't it? I think probably, you know, Jags in his heyday alongside Distan was the last time we had proper pace at the back there. So he'll definitely add that. But it is interesting to think about whether he'll come in, you know, as a player who'll start on the bench, or is he being signed for the here and now? I don't think we can change Mina and Keane straight away because of the winning start of the season. But we're paying £25 million for them as well. So it is interesting the way it's happened so quickly, and definitely seems like Ancelotti and Brands have kind of taken the opportunity with the seeing that the deal was available.
Brendan, do you think there's any sort of weight to the theory that perhaps this is an early signing of a defender who ultimately will be seen as a replacement for somebody who's already at the club, and we've just done the deal now while we can, that perhaps next summer the club are forecasting that we would lose or sell one of the current back line?
I don't see it that way, no. If you think about it, it's only, is it, well, 3 or 4 weeks since we were forced into playing a young lad who'd only made a handful of appearances for Carlisle United in Premier League matches. You know, you can never second guess what's going to happen in terms of injuries. And we seem to be particularly unfortunate at the moment. And certainly when it comes to central defensive positions, Yerry Mina has not had, you know, an injury-free run, so since he arrived at the club. Mason Holgate's picked up problems. So you don't really know. I mean, most football clubs need 4 first-choice centre-backs. You know, so certainly, if you're going to achieve what Everton intend to achieve, which is European football sooner rather than later, and obviously with this new third-tier European competition coming in next season, you'd like to think that we will be in some level of European competition next season. Regardless. So, you know, you need 4 first-choice centre-halves. And that doesn't include Jarrad Branthwaite, who, as Adam said there, you know, still needs to develop, still needs to learn his game under 23 level, maybe out on loan. So, no, I think he's been brought in, you know, so as a first-team squad player. I don't see there's any need to be moving anybody on at the moment. I mean, obviously, the squad has got lots of players in there that need to be moved on as a matter of some urgency, but I don't think centre-halves are any of them. I think there are, you know, plenty of attacking players and wide players and forward players even that, you know, so we need to move on first.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Gav, as Preno alludes to there, you know, assuming that Godfrey goes through and becomes an Everton player, we would imagine that the focus in the remaining days of the international window, if you like, would be in attempting to shift the unwanted players. We seem to have had this conversation, you know, 50 times in the last 2 years, but yeah. how confident would you be that finally the football club can offload you know, the usual suspects, if you like, and maybe one or two others?
Should we just repeat the podcast from last month and the month before and the month before that? Not very. On the basis that, well, as we all know, the current pandemic and so on means that money is a bit tight, the wages that people are on. I would like to see people just away from Finch Farm if it just means on loan, where we just, you know, take a little bit of bit of saving in the wage bill without getting a transfer fee in for them. So for me, I'd rather get rid of, you know, so I get put somebody on loan now rather than sell them next season. If you know what I mean, I still have them in the club in the next 12 months. I think that's what may happen. But then you need a club to, you can pay wages while they're on loan, that it meets the club's requirements. It's going to be difficult, isn't it? I mean, I would imagine there's probably a few players on the books who've been trying to get it off for 12 months or so, and we still haven't. Carlo was a bit coy about it again today when he was asked that question. So, not confident, but maybe a bit more confident that we get people out on loan.
Adam, Carlo was pretty clear, though, on the future of Yannick Bolasie. Yannick gave an interview last week to the Press Association where he said he wanted to stay and fight, and he'd been training well and all of these things. Obviously, for a couple of years, it's obviously been our understanding that the club had been willing to make him available for sale. Carlo was pretty clear that is the case today, wasn't he?
Yeah. It's quite interesting with Bolasie, isn't it? You know, Carlo Ancelotti reiterated that, you know, Bolasie is doing everything that he can in training and that he's a professional and everything, and he will continue to get the chance to train with the Everton squad until he can find a move. And you know, he'll still be in training if he doesn't find a move before the end of the window. But yeah, Ancelotti made it quite clear that he's not part of his plans, which you know, I don't think we're particularly surprised by. But it's just hard for him, isn't it? Because you know, you can do all you want in training, but as it's transpired, it's just his time has really gone at Everton. You wonder how much that injury did play its part, and you know, with the timer of it, you know, coming so soon after he joined the club, of course, you know, and being out for what was it, over a year. It obviously wasn't the ideal situation for him. He's had a few loan moves since then, did well at Aston Villa and Anderlecht in particular, and then you know, things went a bit awry towards the end of the Sporting Lisbon loan last year, of course, as well. And you know, it seems like it's just been a bit of a summer of waiting around, really, just to see what Bolasie's future is going to hold. And you've got to respect him for, you know, wanting to fight for his place at Everton, because why would he want to fight for his place at Everton? You know, this is one of the biggest moves that he's had in his career, and obviously he has such an affinity for the club, and it's really good for supporters to see, you know, the way he is on social media and everything. He's always engaging with the supporters, and you know, a lot of fans really do respect that kind of attitude from a player. And I don't think it's his attitude that has been the issue here. I think it's just that the Everton squad has progressed over the last few years, and we've got better players in that position now. And unfortunately, it just doesn't seem like there's a place for Yannick. So fingers crossed he can get himself a good move before Monday, because, you know, as I say, you know, it's great to see his attitude, and it's great to see that he's still performing in training. So I think he does deserve it.
Obviously, Sam, among the players in a similar boat to Yannick, Sandro Ramirez, you've gone very quiet. The only thing we've seen or heard from Sandro is him grainily pictured in some training shots at Finch Farm. Do you expect to see him leave on Monday or before?
You'd like to think so, wouldn't you? But at the same time, we all know the situation that clubs are in, and Sandro obviously gets a decent whack of money, probably similar to what Gav's on a week in his job.
Yeah.
That's actually Sam less than me, to be honest with you.
But it's a difficult one, I think, because will anyone be able to pay that? And does it come down to, you know, if we are going to get him out on loan, I've got no doubt that we're going to have to strike a deal where we're still paying a decent proportion of his wages. But as Gav pointed out earlier, anything we can scrape off, whether it's 30, 40%, 25%, would probably be something in this current climate, you know, without fans coming through and paying the money for each game. So, you know, the thing with Sandro and Bolasie is you've got to kind of, on a human level, I think we can all sympathise with the sense of if we were getting paid a large amount of money, even if we were out of favour and we were coming in and people were basically saying they didn't want us there, could you stomach it for 50, 60 grand a week? Yeah, you could, but on a professional level, you've got to hope that they've got enough about them, you know, especially Sandro, who's still only a young man, really, but that they can now, you know, swallow the pride a little bit and say, okay, it hasn't worked out, just find me anything and I'll, you know, if I have to, I'll take a hit on my wages to go out there and play football again. So, you know, there's no criticism, I don't think, from anyone really about the professionalism. I think everyone can respect that it just hasn't worked out. I think Bolasie has showed himself to at least want to interact with supporters this summer and bought a few tops for fans and stuff, which is always, you know, all right to see. But, you know, it's clear now the time has come for them to move on. So I hope for both of them they can get that opportunity. And the same goes for Mo Besic, and then the same goes for, you know, the lads in the under-23s who are looking to get moves away, because I think they all deserve the chance to forge their own careers away from Everton now.
As in keeping with the pods of recent weeks, on a Friday, breaking news as we record, the Merseyside derby kickoff has changed. Still October 17th, but it will be at 12:30 live on BT Sport. And another fixture amendment, Southampton away is now Sunday, October the 25th, and we'll kick off at 2:00. Sam, I want to stay with you, mate, because we need to talk about Everton women. We've spoke about the Blues reaching a quarter final. Well, the women are going to Wembley. A terrific result in the week. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I think the big result was obviously the game at Goodison on last Sunday. That was the first time I'd been to Goodison, actually, Phil, since me and you did the Crystal Palace game where we won 2-1 and Richarlison scored.
3-1.
Yeah, I'm the lucky charm at the moment, I think. but you know, Chelsea unbeaten unbelievably in all competitions since April 2019.
Wow.
And going into the game, they just beat Bristol City women 9-0. So, you know, that showed the size of the task. And when they scored after 4 minutes and they were absolutely battering Everton, and it kind of felt like they were going to probably get close to another 9-0. But, you know, credit to Willie Kerr, credit to the girls in Everton women who fought back. And it was a classic Goodison performance. They came back. They won 2-1. Valerie Galvin, who they signed for relatively big money, apparently, from France in the summer, she scored the winner. And that got them a semi-final against Birmingham, who were second bottom of the the Women's Super League. Haven't won a game, got no points this season. So it was a bit of a reward in the sense that they were heavy favourites, and they did just that. They won 3-0. And that's going to be the first FA Cup final since 2014. And Willie Kirk told us the other day that he's had messages from Carlo Ancelotti, from Marcel Brands, from David Unsworth. You know, and you consider as well that Everton, one of the only full-time teams in the league who also have the women training alongside the men. It shows what a kind of unity there is in the club at the moment, and the club have, you know, promised to keep backing the women's team. We've obviously got Savar Ismailov, who's Alisher Usmanov's nephew, kind of driving that behind the scenes as the sporting and commercial director. So very, very exciting times. If anyone kind of listening wants a footy fix of a weekend, the FA Player, dead easy to download. The women are on tomorrow against Aston Villa. And it is always a good watch. The final will be November the 1st. I think that's going to be streamed on the BBC as well. So, yeah, everyone should tune in. Everyone should get behind them because they are all a lovely bunch of girls as well. They're lovely to talk to after games. There's never too much you can ask for. And Willie's the exact same. Always got time for everyone. And seems to be building something really special. Could be Champions League football coming to the male and female teams next season, hopefully.
what a story that would be indeed. Good stuff, Sam. Prenner, we will now look to Brighton then. That is the game tomorrow at Goodison Park. You mentioned Delph at the top of the podcast. Would you start him? 2 games in 4 days?
Wow, that's the million-dollar question. I'm a little bit worried about this game. Brighton, despite their results, have been impressive this season. Mm-hmm. Lamptey has been an absolute, you know, force of nature in his appearances so far this season. He's an absolute flying machine. Maupay looks, you know, so lively. You know, they've got quality throughout that side, and they were so unlucky against United last weekend. I mean, Everton Brighton games tend to follow a bit of a trend. We always win at Goodison. We always lose down south. We've never lost to Brighton at Goodison. Yeah, I've said it. I know. But you know, so going back to 1913, I think was the first game. We've never been beaten by them. So you know, we generally do okay against them. But we need to be absolutely at it. And given the number of players missing, it's a real juggling act, a real balancing act for Carlo Ancelotti. I've been very, very impressed with Fabian Delph. And, you know, why shouldn't we be impressed by him? You know, he's a very, very good footballer. He was excellent for Manchester City, you know, during his time there. And the appearances that we've seen this season, he was very, very good last week. He was excellent, I thought, on Wednesday. But, you know, he played the full 90 minutes. And you think, wow, it's only 3 days later and his injury record is very, very mixed. I mean, the sports science guys at Finch Farm will be so important in this. They will know whether the guy is susceptible or vulnerable to suffering any kind of recurrence. If he's 100% fit, yeah, start him because he's absolutely ideal to replace Alan. He's just the kind of player that can do that role and can do it very, very well. And should we really be, you know, so wrapping a fella in cotton wool, you know, so 3 or 4 days later? I don't know. So, yeah, if he's fit, if there are no concerns about him suffering a recurrence, 100%, you know, so play him straight away. But, you know, there are other issues for Carlo to look at. I mean, Richarlison's going to have a fitness test, as we know. He's, like, so important at the moment. And he'd be playing on the same side of the pitch as Lamptey as well. So Richarlison's defensive work is as important as everything he does going forward as well. So that would be a big miss if he's not fit again. And obviously Gomez, and I know Gomez, a bit of a curate's egg for some people. to me, I'm a fan. I think he's done well this season, and it's difficult to find, you know, a like for like replacement as such for Gomez. Although Sigurdsson, you know, to me is probably, you know, sort of the ideal person. Ancelotti seems to rate Sigurdsson, wore the captain's armband again in midweek. So lots for the manager to juggle with. But to answer your initial question, yes, Fabian Delph, if he's fit, absolutely he should start.
Gav, any difference of opinion there? Does the loss of Alan and Andre Gomez, does Carlo need to change formation, or does he stick with 4-3-3 and make the formation work around the players who are available?
That's a good question, isn't it? That could depend. The last question could depend on whether Richarlison's fit or not, I suppose. I think if Richarlison's fit, you'd want to keep your front three firing like they have done. I think, to be honest with you, regarding Delph, it's the absence of Alan, full stop, isn't it? I mean, people said that the one thing that's noticeable is the three players who played last year in that area of the pitch when Alan wasn't playing all look far better this year with Alan on the pitch. Sigurdsson, Gomez, Delph. Now, some of that could be a tactical thing as well, but I just think they look for, he does more of the dirty stuff and constructive stuff in terms of playing it short. His passing's good. They all look far better players for it. I think in his absence, you may see them suffer a little bit. So I think I play Delph, but whether you see the Delph that you saw on Wednesday is a moot point, because Alan's not on the pitch, you know, so he might have to play a slightly different role as well. I'd play Delph, definitely. That's why we bought him. Awesome, isn't it? 8 million, whatever it is. Yeah, I'd play Delph in sort of the Alan role and take it from there, to be honest with you.
I'd Gav suggesting there that Delph could play the Alan role. What about Decore? Has he got more legs? Should he play there?
Yeah, Decore was absolutely going to be my shout, to be honest. I think Delph, while he has played well against Fleetwood, and he definitely did play well against West Ham, that West Ham game, he wasn't meant to play 90 minutes in that game. He did end up playing 90 minutes and did well, but that was his first 90 minutes since we drew 2-2 with Newcastle in January. Now, if I just don't want to use him again, because we're going to have to use him for another 90 minutes this time. Can he play 290 minutes in a row inside the space of 4 days? After so long without 90 minutes, I'd rather not risk that, to be honest. I'd play Decore in that role. I think he's got more legs. You know, he's shown against Crystal Palace and he showed against Tottenham as well, you know, his ability to track runners back and make the important tackles and interceptions, etc. I think he'll be fine in that Alan role. And I'd prefer to play Sigurdsson and Bernard in those central roles, because I think Bernard was probably a little bit unlucky to miss out of the game against West Ham. I thought he played really, really well against Fleetwood in particular in that central role. I think he looks a lot more comfortable there than he did out wide for the majority of last season. And I'd like to see him come in and, you know, given that sort of chance in the Premier League again. And I think, you know, as the lads have said, I think Sigurdsson has improved massively this season. I think probably the best example that he's shown was right towards the end of that West Ham game and setting up Calvert-Lewin's goal. You know, he was showed great strength to muscle off two West Ham players and played that inch-perfect pass through ball to Calvert-Lewin to finish. You know, that's the kind of Sigurdsson that we want to see in and around the box. So, yeah, I think Bernard and Sigurdsson would give Calvert-Lewin the amount of service that he needs, you know, obviously with Richarlison and James still on the... Well, hopefully Richarlison, but Richarlison and James still on the wings as well to provide that that service as well. But, yeah, I think Decore is personally the better option. And it's not any reflection on how well Delph's played. I think it's just in terms of his fitness, I just wouldn't want to see him break down and get injured again, to be honest.
Indeed. Sam, we hope everything goes well with Richarlison's fitness test tomorrow morning, because, of course, we've not won a league game when he's been absent. But if worst came to worst and Richarlison doesn't make it, who does Carlo play in his place?
Tough one, isn't it? And it's not great that 2 years, is it, after signing the player, we still haven't won a game without him. So I think Carl would probably go for Iwobi, wouldn't he? Seemingly been the first sub he's turned to and has played pretty well in the Carabao Cup game. So I'd say it'd probably be between him and maybe Bernard Gordon, seems to be a little bit further down the pecking order right now. And Walcott is probably concerningly down the pecking order, despite what Carlo said about his future the other week, when he seemed quite insistent that he would stay at Everton for this transfer window. But obviously that could change. So, yeah, I'd probably go for Iwobi and see what he's got, give him that chance. You know, light that bit of a fire under his belly and say, look, this is your chance to go and really show what you can do. I thought he had a good start to the season, but didn't quite get into the swing of things against Palace when he came off the bench. He looked like he was caught a little bit cold. So I think Ancelotti would go for Iwobi. I would probably go for Bernard or Gordon, but that shows the strength of the squad at the moment, that there's three or four lads who could come in and do that job.
Right, excellent stuff. Before we round off, obviously customary predictions time. Preno, will start with you. Everton versus Brighton at Goodison Park, 3 o'clock tomorrow. How will it go?
I'm going to go with the historical precedent, which is Everton to win, but I think it is going to be a really, really tough, tight game. I'm just going to go for a narrow 1-0 win for the Blues. I know that goes completely contrary to where the games have been going this season. 3.68 goals a game in the Premier League, which is a whole goal a game more than last season. It's just been absolutely mayhem. But I just think this will be the one that bucks the trend. I think it'll be tight. I think they'll just do enough, but I think we'll win.
Yeah. Gav, you told me earlier via email, if Everton win, it'll be 7 successive victories from the start of the season, the second highest in the club's history after 8 in 1894-95. So will that come true?
Well, if you read the more interesting sentence below that, 1894-95, we set the record of 8. Our 8th victory was against Liverpool. So on that basis, see that the fixtures are repeating themselves this year, and we play Liverpool in the fortnight. I've got to go with Everton getting beat, haven't I, really? and I'm with Preno. I really like Potter. Really like, I expect us to win, but I really like Potter. Really like, you know, you can see what they're doing, and they've got some really good players. And I think it's going to be a really tough game. I'd argue probably the toughest of the season, even including Spurs. They've got pace, and I don't know. I feel like saying 2-0, but I'm not particularly confident at all. But I just feel as if I think it's heresy to predict anything other than an Everton victory at the moment, isn't it, really?
I know, who's going to be brave enough to...
the content of this podcast. Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to go 2-0 to the Mighty Blues.
Okay, lovely. Adam? He's on fire, by the way, everybody. Anybody who religiously listens to these predictions, i.e. nobody, would know that Adam has got the last two absolutely spot on.
Yep. 2 in a row. And I'm going to go for the hat-trick here. I'm going to completely disagree with Preno. Carlo Ancelotti's saying that the best defence will win this one and it'll be a really open game. So I'm going to go 4-2 to Everton.
4-2, wow. I mean, Adam's trying to take... He's tried to take Sam's mantle as the man who predicts goals. Sam, what do you think?
3-0. Confident. I think a clean sheet incoming now as well after a couple of goals conceded in the last couple of games. So, yeah, 3-0. James Rodriguez, first goal.
So confident is Sam that he was yawning through that answer. He's so relaxed. So relaxed about the game. You're just doing Potter's team talk for him again. It's like the Fleetwood game. Okay, I'm going to go in between all those predictions. I agree it'll be a very difficult game. I think the Blues will win 2-1, but I'm not confident in keeping a clean sheet with Alan, not in the team. He does a great job in protecting the back four. But yeah, clean sweep again. Hopefully 7 from 7. What a start for the Blues. Carlo Ancelotti's boys are flying. And thank you, chaps. Excellent as always. Really appreciate your company and your opinions. And thank you very much for listening. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.